Welcome to Rieger World Studios in the heart of Berkeley, California. I'm John Rieger, and joining me again today is my old friend, Paulina Borsuk. Hi, Paulina.
Hi, John.
We've been having these conversations in observance of the imminent reissue after 26 years of your classic book, Cyber Selfish, a critical romp through the terribly libertarian culture of high tech. It's interesting now to review some of your other writings from the same time. And today I want to talk about your 1999 article for Salon, How the Internet Ruined San Francisco. You are certainly Little Miss Sunshine. How can a town built by the gold rush be ruined by a gold rush?
I would say, yes, it was that famous book, The World Rushed In, about the gold rush making San Francisco. But the point is, by the time the dot-com boom happened, you had an intact real city with all kinds of cultural institutions, small businesses, wacko arty things. You know, you had an existing urban fabric, and you also had, there was a place for people who weren't gazillionaires. That's what I was complaining about. It was the hyper-gentrification.
You know, my wife and I lived in San Francisco's Mission District in the late 80s, and we had a favorite bar and grill near the financial district that we liked because they served both a good hamburger and a decent martini. The bar in this place would be packed with young finance bros howling like a scene from Bonfire of the Vanities. And you could already, there in the Reagan 80s, feel the growing class divide of income inequality. But you say the arrival of the dot-com boom heralded something different.
It's about degree and magnitude. And also, for me, it was a shock in that, you know, San Francisco to me, or even the Bay Area, was a place where people came to reinvent themselves, do interesting stuff. You know, they always say all the fruits and nuts, you know, ended up here. And it was a shock to me to see people coming to San Francisco just to make money. Yeah. That was strange. I mean, of course, San Francisco for a long time was the financial center of the West, you know, probably because it started with the gold rush money and then the B of A. I'm not saying there was never finance in San Francisco. But a long time ago, the financial center of California moved to L.A., and people moved to San Francisco because they were arty or they were gay or they were strange. I mean, those are the people that wanted to live here. And it was naively, I was so shocked to see they're just here to make money. They don't care about what's here or what this is about. And if you tried to talk to them about City Lights Bookstore or the Wave Organ, which you remember Frank Oppenheimer, you know, made, which is one of my favorite hidden places in San Francisco, they would just look at you blankly.
So one of the things you write of in this article we're discussing is San Francisco's unique history and sensibility being, quote, swamped by twerps with tood.
That was a line Gary Kamiya came up with, actually.
Well, you were smart to adopt it. Right. But do you mean by that to demonize the entire dot-com world?
I can't because I had friends who worked in it. But
I can remember. I was there. I'm the same age as you, which is, what, 108? And I remember the sense of possibilities opening up. A lot of us who were sort of marginal creative types looked at the arrival of the internet as a huge creative opportunity.
I remember when everybody wanted to get into CD production because they had all these ideas of beautiful storytelling and multi-threaded and gorgeous whatever. Boy, that went away.
But just, you know, shoot me now,
but
really.
But everybody wanted to go into that because all the liberal arts flakes with artistic tendencies saw this as a new medium that they could work within.
It was interactive. It was going to be interactive storytelling.
Right. That's right. And that all went away.
I'm totally opposed to that. I believe storytelling should be dictatorial.
So do I. I absolutely believe
Here's that. How the story goes.
That's right. You know, it's all artistic production that's any good. It needs an editor-in-chief. It needs a director. Some sort of benign dictator goes, it's this and not that.
The article we're talking about here is How the Internet Ruined San Francisco. You wrote this article for Salon right before the dot-com bust.
That's right.
An event that in my mind always conjures up images of caravans of U-Hauls leaving the city. 20 years after that, we had COVID and the resulting epidemic of empty office space as tech workers stayed home in droves. Now there's the AI boom, and who knows how that will shake out. How have these booms and busts affected the city?
I think every time you drive out people that marginal is too strong, but, you know, who, you know, they have other things they're interested in their life than just making money, and they need space to breathe and think and whatever, and you get rid of rehearsal space and installation space and smart galleries and all that kind of stuff, and you drive those people away. And then, you know, COVID, I think, was a double whammy for San Francisco because, of course, it really affected the economic base. And so a lot of businesses or cultural institutions that you and I would like went out of business. There was no base for them anymore. But now with the AI robots coming in, they're not going to create those kind of spaces. They're not interested in that stuff. And so you have, you know, nature abhorring a vacuum, but what's being filled in that vacuum cannot replace what was washed away. I mean, as a friend of mine said, who's a, you know, international relations specialist, but it's obvious. It's really easy to destroy things. It's hard to bring things back. You know, like topsoil takes what, something like 50 years to create half an inch of topsoil. That's how I look at it culturally. You get rid of all that stuff, but you can't just reconstitute it. I mean, I think I can never pronounce his name, but Tony H, the guy who started Zappos.
I have no idea.
Okay. He decided that he was going to save downtown Las Vegas and make it sort of a replica of like what the Mission District used to be or North Beach and stuff like that, and fund all kinds of small businesses, whatever. But he didn't know. He's a techie guy. He didn't know what he was doing, and it floundered. He died. It went away. You can't just turn a switch and create that.
The topsoil metaphor is very good. When you think of the components of a healthy urban topsoil, there are many different dimensions of freedom. If you're rich enough, you have the freedom to buy the world's biggest yacht, for example. But if you are free from certain kinds of cultural conventions and commitments, you are free to invent new ways of addressing the world. It's
Or music making. I mean, or I think of like the Wooster Group, or, you know, all the.
You need all those things.
You need all those things.
Everything can be boiled down to the bottom line.
Absolutely. And, you know, New York was famous for having a lot of low income, whatever it is, affordable housing for artists like West Beth and a whole bunch of other places. In other words, you need that. And I don't think it exists in San Francisco anymore. And I don't know what San Francisco is anymore.
Towards the end of your article, you actually ask this rhetorical question: what can San Francisco mean if it's not a place where you can be arty or subversive or living in genteel socialist poverty, which I can barely remember, but I know it once existed. How would you answer that question? What can San Francisco be if those dimensions of human expression
are? Well, San Francisco is in a funny place because they lost, you know, things that I thought would never go away, like iMagnon and Macy's and Union Square being this kind of an elegant urban space that was kind of, you know, made us a contender for a great big city, you know. Those are all gone.
Christmas at Macy's with my mom when I was a little kid was always a big, exciting, fun trip.
So all those are gone, and I don't know. So you have the AI robots, you know, driving up rents and, you know, populating certain neighborhoods, of course, but all the other funny, diverse, spare, quoting Gerard Manley Hopkins, Pied Beauty, all those other things are gone away. So what will San Francisco be? I mean, the views are still there. What I didn't know when I was working on this piece, Joan Walsh, who was the news editor of Salon, just asked me if I wanted to write on the hypergentrification of San Francisco. I don't know why she asked me, but I was like, boy, howdy, do I?
Why would she ask you? That is a question, a mystery. It's like the square root of a million. We will never know.
But it was lovely. And when I wrote it, I didn't even know if they'd like it. And then it turns out for the next 6 months, I'd say about once a week when I was in some cafe or someplace, bar in San Francisco or Berkeley, I would hear people talking about it. And this piece. And,
nice.
And raging about it. Some people go, that's wrong. We're great. How dare she slag us techies? And other people going, no, she's right. You're having a terrible deleterious effect on the urban fabric. It was like everywhere I went.
Do you think that this essay from 1999 is timely now?
Unfortunately, yes. Yes.
Why is that?
Because of the AI boom deforming San Francisco in so many ways. And again, you have people flocking here just to make money and not wanting to be left behind. So, yes, unfortunately, this is horribly timely, and I wish it were. But then again, everything I wrote 25, 30 years ago is horribly timely. I wish it weren't the case.
That's why you are the author of a minor modern classic.
Oh, Gil Durand called it a masterpiece.
Paulina Borsuk is the author of the classic Cyber Selfish, a critical romp through the terribly libertarian culture of high tech, coming in a new edition this fall. And we've been talking about her 1999 essay, How the Internet Ruined San Francisco. Read it. It feels fresh to this day.
Read it and weep. And also, I found out today the ebook will be out June 4th.
Excellent. Thank you for being here, Paulina.
Thank you, John, for being you.
I'm happy to be me. I'm John Rieger. Bye.